The views and opinions expressed on a Gaza Corner are mine and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of KALW Public Media. There is nothing Donald Trump likes more than feeding his ego. And I think nothing feeds his ego more than making deals. And he wanted to, before his inauguration day, do what Biden could not do in 15 months, and that's achieve a ceasefire in Gaza. And he did it and deserves credit for it. I should point out that it has been widely reported, and I will use Mohammed Shahada as a source. He's a Gazan journalist and human rights observer. His quote comes from Democracy Now!, and that's linked at the Gaza Corner section of the playlist at tangents.com. Mohammed says, quote, "The ceasefire is literally the same text as the one that was produced by Israel's own team on the 27th of May, 2024. Hamas accepted it on July 2nd. Hamas was informed by mediators that the Israeli team gave a positive response as well. Prime Minister Netanyahu immediately rejected it as soon as Hamas said yes. And Netanyahu imposed four conditions that his own generals, his own advisors, his own negotiators said these conditions are impossible and render a deal unfeasible. But he insisted on them," unquote. So the ceasefire is the same deal. Netanyahu's thirst for political survival and Biden's just weakness contributed to the needless deaths of perhaps tens of thousands of Gazans and several hundred Israeli soldiers. All could have been avoided. It's the same deal, but 6 months later. But why was it such a priority for Trump to close the deal? Ego alone does not explain it. It was Trump's first priority because he has his eye on a big prize, a mega business deal with Saudi Arabia, and Gaza stood in his way. Trump said following his inauguration that he would consider making Saudi Arabia his first destination for a foreign visit, which holds a great deal of symbolic significance. And Trump would do so, he said, if the Saudis agreed to buy $500 billion, billion with a B, worth of American products. A few days later, Saudi leader Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman told Trump that his government wants to put $600 billion into expanded investment and trade with the U.S. over the next 4 years. And this is according to the Saudi state news agency. Trump also wants to have the Saudis normalize relations with Israel, but he is aware Saudi Arabia has said that normalization with Israel is quote-unquote off the table until there is a pathway to Palestinian statehood. That used to not be the condition. It used to be Palestinian statehood. Now it's pathway to. Hence, Trump's push for the Gaza ceasefire. Netanyahu and his coalition members have publicly denounced any prospect of a sovereign Palestinian state. And I don't think bin Salman personally cares about the Palestinians, but he does know that the Saudi populace does care about the Palestinians, and he wants to avoid any kind of domestic unrest. The Saudis also want to extract a security deal with the United States and also gain U.S. assistance with its civilian nuclear program in exchange for normalizing relations with Israel. Trump's incoming U.S. National Security Advisor, his name is Mike Waltz, W-A-L-T-Z. He was on a podcast, Dan Senor's podcast, and Waltz called Saudi-Israeli normalization, quote-unquote, a huge priority. However, he also said the Trump administration will support another Israeli assault into Gaza if the ceasefire does not hold. And even if it's Israel's fault, you know Hamas will be blamed. I don't see why the Saudis would do anything until phase two of the ceasefire is agreed to and implemented and seen through. And that's a giant if. And even Trump is not confident. There's a little story linked at the Gaza Corner section where on January 20th, after his inauguration, he was asked by a reporter whether the two sides would maintain the truce and move on to the agreement. And Trump said, quote, "I'm not confident. That's not our war. It's their war. But I'm not confident." Then his real estate mindset took over and he said, quote, "It's a phenomenal location on the sea. Best weather. You know, everything's good. It's like some beautiful things could be done with it," talking about Gaza. So phase one is underway. There's a Jeremy Scahill piece from Drop Site News linked at the Gaza Corner section that describes the three phases of the ceasefire. And phase one is underway. And I'll quote Scahill's description of phase two, which would start 42 days after phase one. Quote, "The release of Israeli soldiers held in Gaza in exchange for more Palestinian captives, including hundreds of political prisoners, some of whom are serving life sentences in Israeli prisons. It's during this period that the draft agreement states, quote, a permanent ceasefire will take effect before further prisoner exchanges, and Israeli forces will fully withdraw from Gaza," unquote. That's why I say it's a big if. There is a real chance Netanyahu's coalition will collapse if Israeli forces fully withdraw from Gaza. Haaretz, the Israeli newspaper, has a columnist, Chaim Levinson. He wrote on January 16th, quote, "In an attempt to sell the deal to his base, Netanyahu and his spin doctors promise that this is but a small, tiny lull, after which, if need be, the war will resume at full strength with lethal fire. And this time, it will be with license from President Donald Trump to withhold food and more from Gaza," unquote. Some have argued that Trump offered Netanyahu sweeteners to accept the deal. But as far as I'm concerned, most of the sweeteners mentioned were going to be given anyway. Settlement expansion is going to happen regardless. Palestinian land continue to be stolen and replaced by illegal West Bank settlements. Annexation may be formally granted. Who knows? Trump likes to reward his biggest donors. And his number one donor is Miriam Adelson. And she's made very clear she wants the West Bank formally annexed. So we'll see. Israel needs Trump's support for a strike on Iran's nuclear facilities. But the big enchilada is normalization with Saudi Arabia, which also depends largely on Trump because of the demands made by Ben Salman. Again, Gazan analyst Mohammed Shahida, he's an investigator for the Euro Mediterranean Human Rights Monitor. He tweeted, "Trump's gift bag, quote unquote, gift bag, also includes lifting all sanctions on Israel's spyware Pegasus and lifting sanctions on Israeli settlers," which he's already done, reversing Biden, "and allowing major West Bank land theft that I also just mentioned." His tweet also includes a couple of screenshots from Israel's Ynet newspaper. I'll read from the screenshot, quote, "President Trump, according to a source familiar with the details, has already promised Netanyahu and Minister Ron Dermer that if they agree to a ceasefire," which they've done, of course, "and the withdrawal of IDF forces from the Gaza Strip," that remains to be seen, "he will support Israel retroactively if it decides to return to fighting and violate the ceasefire. This may solve one issue for Netanyahu, but it's not certain that it is enough to calm the coalition members. There's another screenshot that says there are also indications that Trump intends to wage an all-out war against the International Criminal Court in The Hague and against the arrest warrants issued against Netanyahu and former Defense Minister Yoav Gallant. And the previous Trump administration waged a fight against proceedings at the ICC that dealt with suspicions of American war crimes in Afghanistan. Concurrent with the ceasefire deal, Israel started a new invasion inside Palestine, and you have to know that Trump had to have been fine with it. I think Trump actually could care less about it because what happens in the West Bank will not garner the headlines in the mainstream media that what happens in Gaza does. There are just fewer deaths, smaller population, and I think that he's going to give Netanyahu complete green light to do whatever he wants in the West Bank. The timing of the invasion of Jenin, the Jenin refugee camp, which is an operation dubbed Iron Wall. Anytime Israel calls something an operation, gives it a name, you know many, many people will die. Many, many people will be forced from their homes. Many people will be imprisoned. And it's such an extreme military escalation, and Haaretz writer Alan Pinkas calls the quote-unquote ultra-nationalist messianic warmongering ruling coalition partners, that's his phrase, who have threatened to bring down Netanyahu's coalition, namely Bezalel Smotrich and Itamar Ben-Gvir, if the IDF were to withdraw from Gaza, which they're supposed to do in phase two, he believes that they will bring down the Netanyahu coalition. Remember that these ultra-nationalist messianics, they dream of building settlements in northern Gaza, which has been ethnically cleansed and made uninhabitable, conceivably already laying the groundwork for building Jewish settlements. Escalations have increased not just in Jenin, but all throughout the West Bank, and that's since the announcement of the ceasefire. Israeli settlers under the protection and participation of the IDF have set fire to Palestinian homes, to cars, to properties. This is nothing new, but the attacks have had like a steroidal increase. The attacks are intended to ethnically cleanse Palestinians from their communities. Once they can clean Palestinians from a community, they usually turn it into a closed military zone and then eventually turn it into a new settlement. Trump picked Bible-thumping ultra-Zionist Mike Huckabee as the ambassador to Israel. Huckabee said, quote, "There is no such thing as the West Bank. It's Judea and Samaria," which implies, of course, that he believes that the Israelis have a biblical right to all of historic Palestine. And Huckabee also infamously said during a 2008 campaign stop when he was running for president, quote, "Basically, there really is no such thing as, and I need to be careful about saying this because people will get really upset, there's really no such thing as a Palestinian." That's the pick to be U.S. ambassador to Israel. Mike Huckabee, Trump's pick to be the U.N. ambassador, Elise Stefanik, was definitive when asked if she shared the view of messianic ultra-nationalist Israeli Foreign Minister Bezalel Smotrich and former National Security Minister Itamar Ben-Gvir. This was during a Senate confirmation hearing in exchange with Democratic Senator Chris Van Hollen. She was asked, does Israel have the biblical right to the entire West Bank? And her answer was, yes. The mainstream media has provided overwhelming coverage of the release of the three Israeli hostages, but next to nothing about the thousands of Palestinian hostages who languish in beyond brutal prison conditions. I say that the majority of Palestinians in Israeli prison are hostages. Most are arrested arbitrarily. As of December of 2024, there were over 10,400 Palestinians held captive by Israel, including 320 children, nearly 90 women. This is according to the Palestinian prisoner rights group Adamir. Of these, nearly 3,400 are being held in administrative detention, which means they are imprisoned without charge or trial, no due process, for up to six-month periods, which can be renewed indefinitely. Many others in prison have been charged with inciting violence, an allegation which Israeli authorities use to, quote, any form of solidarity or resistance, according to Adamir. This includes the crime of sharing or liking a social media post. No Israeli Jew would ever be put in prison for these crimes. In addition to the administrative detainees, another 10,000 or so are serving various sentences after being tried in Israeli military courts. These courts are a total sham. I actually witnessed it myself. It's just a joke. I mean, all you have to know is the conviction rate is close to 99% to know it's a sham. In total, between 12 to 13,000 Palestinians have been detained over the last 15 months. Quote, we've never had this many prisoners all being held at the same time within the occupation's prisons. That's according to Jenna Abu Hasna, Adamir's international advocacy officer. She told this to Drop Site News. A total of 1,700 Palestinian captives are scheduled to be released if the ceasefire terms are honored. About 700 were imprisoned prior to October 7th. It was made clear to the mediators that anyone who refuses deportation and insists on remaining in the West Bank would not be released. This is family separation. The list of the countries that will serve as destinations for deportation has not yet been decided. The first group released consisted of 90 captives, all women and children. And keep in mind, Israel routinely rearrests many who are released. Jonathan Kutab of Fasna wrote in his excellent blog, which is linked at the Gaza Corner section, quote, Israel arrested 60 additional Palestinians who were all the male worshippers in the Qalqilya Mosque the very same day as the release of the three Israeli hostages. It was as if they wanted to compensate for the 90 Palestinian hostages they released that day. The Shin Bet, the Israeli FBI, insisted on certain principles in terms of allowing prisoners to be freed or not. The release of figures described as quote-unquote symbols was vetoed, and the most conspicuous was Marwan Barghouti, who many compare to Nelson Mandela. He can unify the Palestinian factions in a way that Israel does not want to see, and also Mahmoud Abbas, the head of the Palestinian Authority, does not want to see, because he doesn't want to, even though he's 89 years old, he doesn't want to be threatened. The truth is, every Palestinian in the West Bank, every family in the West Bank, has had a member or a close relative imprisoned at one time or another. It's true in Gaza as well, but in Gaza, I imagine every single Palestinian knows a member or a close relative who has been killed. There are 20,000 orphans in Gaza. I pray with this ceasefire, the madness will stop.